Thank you indeed, John, for that. Now, Dave McCarthy from McCarthy and Associates sits up to me as well this morning. And Dave, morning to you. How are you today?
I'm very well, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. There's a rake of questions that are in as well today, but I was just reading the papers very early this morning. So, wasn't I see where AIB have had a bumper year. They've made 2 billion euro in profit.
Yeah, and Bank of Ireland a few weeks ago recorded record profits as well. This is on the back of increased interest rates, so their margins have gone through the roof. So, yeah.
They're still 40% owned as of today. They're still 40% owned by the government.
Look, you don't get rid of a legacy from the financial downturn and what happened with those banks and getting bailed out and the amount of capital that was put into them, you know, in a short space of time. And it's not a short space of time. But eventually the government will bow out and become a non-shareholder and trying to get as much money back for the taxpayer as possible.
But it's a significant amount of money to make on an annual basis, on the backs of the customers.
It is, but, you know, you could argue the point that in saying that, you know, this is a culmination of a number of years with the bank where they were cost-cutting and they were also reorganising themselves. And, yeah, look, it's it is what it is. Banks have to make money. They're not charitable organisations.
How do I find out more information about my dormant bank account, this caller wants to know?
Well, look, if you have information, I presume you've got something, like an account number, some details. Go into the bank that you're dealing with. There is a process for claiming back dormant monies. When it goes into the dormant structure, it doesn't mean that it's gone up a chimney and has disappeared. You can claim it back. And they will give you the forms and the details that you need. If you don't have an account number, which is going to cause a problem, you need to talk to them about how you can try to establish, maybe to find that. But, you know, they're going to require all sorts of data from you before they can, they're not just going to turn around and hand you out an account number.
So can I ask an awful stupid question?
Yeah.
How does an account go dormant?
After 7 years, if the account hasn't had a transaction, it becomes dormant. So in other words, this has been a process that's been in existence for a long period of time where the government brought in this, our Department of Finance, this dormant structure. These are accounts that would have been there, some of them could be there 20, 30 years and have never had a transaction in them. So they put them into this dormant structure. And that dormant money actually is very often used for charitable purposes.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean your money's gone. Your
it's
money
used.
Is, the government is still, you know, on the hook, or Department of Finance, whoever it is, Central Bank, to give you back your funds when you claim it. So once you make any sort of a transaction within the 7 years, it stops it from becoming dormant, and usually you get loads of letters about it.
Okay, and the next question is nearly as off-putting as a previous one as to how you would know you had a dormant account, but anyway, I've lost details of some shares that I had. How can I find out what I had?
This is a real problem for some people because, you know, they buy shares in a company, they may or may not, you know, kind of be cognizant of the fact that they even have them. Sometimes they forget. It's a hard thing to understand, but it does happen as time moves on. And there are no stockbrokers, if you like, that want to deal and will deal with the private investor, the small investor. What you need to do is go along to the likes of Computershare, computershare.com. They act as a registry service for most publicly listed companies, and they will ask you to fill out documentation, and at least you can start the process.
Mm. Interesting.
Computershare.com.
Computershare.com, sorry, yeah. Do you think the huge rise in AI company share values, like Nvidia, is another potential dot-com bubble?
Good question, no. And the reason why, the dot-com, if we cast our memories back to the turn of the century in 2000, was a bubble that was based on the potential for the internet. The internet hadn't come of age, the internet wasn't widely used. It's hard to imagine that 24 years ago that wasn't the case, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And there was an awful lot of hope and expectation built into the companies that were operating in that space. And basically, it took a period of years for the internet to come into being for those type of companies that were still around after that bubble burst to begin to flourish and begin the likes of Google and Microsoft and all of those. So we have a situation now with AI is a different ballgame altogether. Within 2 years, we see AI being used every day by different businesses, by people privately, by all sorts of entities. So AI has now come into the mainstream immediately, and it's going to have an enormous impact.
Give me a practical example.
Okay, I was watching a documentary, and this is how it could possibly affect the medical field, where this guy, it was in the States, he allowed himself to become part of an experiment. He was paralyzed from the neck down. And using an AI technology, which was putting electrodes at the bottom of his spine and connecting it to his brain, they showed him walking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, moving gingerly and aided, but he was able to move. They turned off the technology and he was frozen in time. So, like, I think it has got enormous potential. And it is already being used, and it's being used widely and will continue to be used. It's the next big thing. Mm. It really is. And companies like NVIDIA, they're not based on hope failure. NVIDIA are making huge profits already. The dot-com era, those companies made no money. It was all hope. They didn't make a penny. They had no revenue in a lot of cases. So these AI companies are actually making money. Now, there's going to be victims and like everything else, every company is not going to be successful. But it's a space I wouldn't be afraid of. If you're interested in buying shares in AI companies, do your research. But there's also other ways. There are funds out there and there are investments that are exposed to AI for you that saves you having to buy individual shares. But it is the era that's going to be probably change our lives even more dramatically than probably the internet when it came in.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Keith. Can you ask Dave, is there an online platform where I can buy and sell shares myself without a broker, and which one is best? John wants to know.
Okay, there is no, I can't say anyone is better than the other. They're all much or much. If you do your research, there are a lot of online platforms for you to buy and trade shares. In fact, actually, you can't go to a broker because unless you're talking about having serious books, a broker doesn't want to know you. They're only really interested in very wealthy private clients. So yes, John, going the internet route is your answer. Just do a bit of research. There's nothing in particular. No company.
Is there anyone that you would recommend?
No, there's nothing in particular. They're all a much of a much, but there's a lot of them out there.
All right. Keith, can you ask Dave, in relation to the Financial Ombudsman's Office is taking up to 5 years to resolve complaints, why is it taking so long?
I feel for people in this space. It was announced the other day that the Ombudsman's Office are going to recruit something like up to 35 or 40 people. Why? Because the backlog is chronic, okay? It appears now...
What type of complaints would they be?
Any complaint that somebody is making as a customer with a financial institution of having a problem. The Ombudsman's Office was set up, it's a free service, to help the customer who has a complaint with an institution who didn't get satisfaction from that institution, and then they have some recourse to somebody else, and that's the Ombudsman's Office. Unfortunately, there's an enormous backup of cases. In some situations, I've heard that maybe more complex ones, they're taking up to 5 years. Now, I have a big problem here with the institutions in this as well, right? Remember one thing, when they take a complaint, they're supposed to give a judgment on your complaint to them on a fair basis, and maybe they'll fine for you or against you, and if not, you go on to the Ombudsman's Office. I firmly believe that a lot of institutions out there are just throwing out claims that come into them willy-nilly because they said, let the Ombudsman make a decision on this.
It'll take five years and somebody else's problem.
It goes down a hole and we forget about it. And they have adhered to their responsibility by going through the complaints process. They issue a final letter. I'll be blunt about it, a PFO, right? I know that's crude, but it is what's happening. And then you move on to the Ombudsman's Office. That puts the customer in a horrendous situation because you don't know the seriousness of what their complaint could be. And it could be something that really has an impact on their finances. And the bank or life company is not stepping up to the mark. And the Ombudsman's Office then is taking up to 5 years.
The penny dropped. I got what PFO means. Thank you.
Sorry. I choose myself for the bad language, or potentially.
Yeah, but it's the truth.
So but it is. I know it's a crude way, but it is the truth.
You haven't broken any law.
Okay, good.
That's okay.
I want to have this.
Two very quick ones. I've rented the house that I used to live in for the last number of years. I'm just wondering if I go to sell it, am I liable for capital gains tax? Yes.
Well, you are up to the time that well, okay, put it this way. The time that you occupied the house, it was your home, and you're not liable for capital gains tax during that period. Mm-hmm. You will only be liable for capital gains tax on the increase in value since you left it. So for argument's sake, if you left the house and it was worth 100,000 and now it's still worth 100,000, there's no increase in value there, you don't pay any CGT. So it's not a question that just because you left the house that the full increase in value from the time you bought it to the time you sell it will result in a liability. It's only from the time that you moved out when and then did not become your family home, or didn't become, or it was no longer, I should say, your family home and became a rental property.
Dave, I'm losing money on an investment I took out 8 years ago. Should I stick with it?
Look, there's a kind of a saying about chasing a rabbit and you may never catch it. What do I mean by that is, look, if you're losing money in something, it doesn't mean that you should stick with it indefinitely and that it's going to recoup its value. It depends on what you have. I mean, this customer was in this for 8 years. So I would strongly question, like, why you should stick with it. And why am I saying that? Maybe you're better off to suffer the loss and go into something else that may hopefully help you to recoup what you've lost. A lot of different investments have been launched in that 8 year period, which may give you the opportunity to recoup what you've lost.
But it's the chicken and egg situation. If they do, and then the investment they've lost out.
There's always risk attached, no matter what decision you make. But just sticking blindly, kind of in hope, because you could be in something that's really so far underwater in terms of maybe it was invested in, I don't know. We don't know
bananas in Indonesia.
So I know that's an extreme example. But, you know, sometimes you're better off cut your losses, move into something else and hopefully make a gain of it.
And if it changes, so be it. You just make a decision.
Yeah.
All right, Tim McCarthy, McCarthy and Associates, thank you for joining us today on the programme. And thanks for your questions. And John is here next week, so he'll have loads of questions for you, Dave, as well. Dave McCarthy, McCarthy and Associates. Quick commercial break, back after these. A very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's programme. We're with you right through until 12 midday. International Women's Day. Lunch is taking place in the King's Head Bistro in Galway City in aid of Self Help Africa this coming Friday. Roland Scully joins me and Mary joins me as well. And Roland, first off, where did the idea come from? If I got your microphone right now, just give me 1 second and I get you right altogether there. Again, if you want to get further detail, we're going to tell you you can buy the tickets in a minute. Mary, where can they buy the tickets, by the way?
Actually, Ronan will give out his details in a minute and you can contact Ronan.
When I find him on the system here.
Yes.
He's unknown at this stage. He's undocumented at this stage. Ronan, where can they get details on it?
Well, basically, they can contact me on 087-618-9094 or ronan.scully@selfhelpafrica.org or at the office at the Westside Community Centre, Resource Centre in Westside.
You'll be standing outside selling tickets, will you?
Well, there'll be someone there at the office anyway to be able to help out, whatever. Now, we've only a limited number of tickets, like, because we've already sold a good few tickets, and we're so thankful.
There's no such thing in the King's Head as limited. There's no such thing as limited. Isn't that just so he goes on, limited? Shoot, look, you can go upstairs, downstairs, the blue room.
That's true.
Fill everywhere.
That's true.
But again, it's very generous indeed of Mary and Paul.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the King's Head have been brilliant supporters of the work that I've been involved in over the years, and they've been absolutely fantastic. So many good causes and so many charities, and I'm lucky that Paul and Mary are my friends as well, and they've always been so good to me since I've come to Galway many, many years ago, and I'm just so grateful to all the Grealishes and to the King's Head for the great support that they've given to Self Help Africa. And this is our fourth year of our International Women's Day lunch. So it's a fantastic thing, and it's grown every year, and this year we have a few guest speakers, and our main guest speaker is Dr. Mary Corbett, who's a colleague of mine who you've met before. And Mary's just back from Kenya. She came back yesterday. So she'll be talking about the work that we're involved in Kenya and also in East Africa, where so many women are not even second-class citizens. And I'm just back myself from Ethiopia. And as I was telling you before, Keith, over 850,000 people have been killed in the war in Ethiopia over the last 3 years. And there's about 4.5 million displaced people that we're helping, along with Irish Aid, the Irish government. And I was in camps where basically, like, there was one camp I was in, there was 8,000 people in the camp, and it was mainly women and children. So we're hoping that the funds raised from this event on Friday International Women's Day will go towards providing food, providing water for people in these camps in northern Ethiopia, in a place called Debrebrann, and also in Kenya, where Mary will be talking about as well, about the women's projects that she was visiting as well.
But see, it must be very hard to come home from that. I said that to you before, when you come home from Ethiopia, and we know that life isn't good over there, and you've told us before, and you've sent us photographs, and we've spoken about it. But there's so much going on in the world. There's so much misery in the world. It must be very hard to turn your back on that and walk away.
Well, absolutely. And some of the places that I've been, you know, that have been doing well, and then something happens, and it takes two or three steps backwards, and you get very emotional and very sad. I have my cries, and I suppose my faith is very important to me, and it helps me deal with
it. You need something.
Yeah, and I was very, very upset. So I was in Ethiopia recently, seeing the way northern Ethiopia has turned out with the fighting in Tigray and Amhara and Oromo, and just so many displaced people. And on top of that, then East Africa has a severe drought still going on in Somalia, Ethiopia, Kenya, and parts of Uganda and Sudan. And also now there's fear that there might be fighting between Ethiopia and Somalia as well, over land as well. And just there's so many places around the world, and even in our own countries, we have our own difficulties and problems as well. And I suppose the way I look at things is everyone has their own ups and downs, and if we can help one another, you know, even in our families and in our towns and in our communities. And I'm just so grateful to Paul and Mary Grealish and everyone in the King's Head, because they're helping us, to do the work that we do in parts of Africa by organising this fantastic lunch in the King's Head on Friday. And they're not charging us one cent. Everything has been put on by Mary and Paul, and by the staff, and by their son Rory, and of great staff in there, and Brendan the chef, and everyone's just so good in there, and they're giving all the proceeds to our work, to our women's projects. So they are in Africa, and I just can't thank Paul and Mary Grealish and everyone in the King's Head for their great support always.
Isn't he some man for one man?
He's some man, yeah. Ronan is absolutely unbelievable, and Self-Help Africa, of course, we know that every penny is going to go towards a very good cause, and directly to the people.
Yeah, and on the ground. What's on the menu, can I ask
the
you?
The menu, there's crab claws, there's scallops.
Very posh altogether. Go on.
Santola's goat's cheese, there's a fresh pan-fried cod, there's a friendly farmer free-range chicken. So there's lots on the menu to choose from. And because it's Friday as well, we'll be cracking open the champagne, so people will be out for the afternoon.
Oh, that's it. So they have to sign up for the afternoon.
Yes.
Gee, haven't I happy. I declined that offer just in case.
Well, it starts at 12:30. The meal will start at 12:30, and it'll run on until 2:30, 3:00. And if people want to stay on afterwards, they're more than welcome.
But do you know what I love about Mary? She has a note in front of her, and you still remembered it. So what do you call the chef's name as well?
Brendan Keane.
Brendan Keane. Yeah. Well,
Brendan, what you now need to do is mix the menu up all together. So it runs, you see, start 12:30 and then...
At 12:30.
Half 12, then people will be coming in just before that, and they'll be sitting down and they'll be welcomed, you know, and...
Yeah, it's usually great fun, yeah, you know, it's great chat,
and there's lovely people as usual coming along. And as I said, then at towards the end of it, then Dr. Mary Corbett will say a few words about the work that we're doing.
She'll sober them up, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah. And we also have a few other guest speakers as well that will appear during the day. Yeah. We're hoping that our mayor of our city will be there at the start as well, just to welcome everyone into the King's Head.
And what is capacity in the bistro?
In the bistro, roughly, it's about 70, so,
wow. Yeah. That's the old malt house bistro, but it's now your bistro, yeah. So it's 70, yeah.
Yeah.
And then 70 in the main bar. 2,500 upstairs. And the blue room would take quite about 40.
The ruby room takes another 70.
I knew it was a colour, but I couldn't tell what it was. So I reckon there'd be about 1,500 people trying to grind on the day.
Hopefully.
The loaves and the fishes, you've heard of that story.
Yeah. So
this is what Paul and Mary are going to do, and Brendan
loaves
and
fishes,
Rory.
You can, yeah. And don't be offering to go into the kitchen to help them either. Leave them at their job.
I'll be hiding in the corner because it's International Women's Day.
And Keith, can I congratulate you on your retirement?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
The Voice of Galway for so many years, and you've been so kind and supportive to everybody in the King's Head and myself and Paul.
Not at all.
And can I just say, Keith, as well, on behalf of myself and everyone in Self Help Africa, and on behalf of my own family on a personal level as well, I'd just like to thank you for all you've done for so many charities and so many groups over the years, because a lot of charities, and I know my own charity, would not be able to do the work that it does without the support of people like yourselves, and especially in the media. And, you know, you've been a huge help, and you'll never know the goodness that you've done to so many people and so many charities. And I just thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you. I do, since I announced it, I do, the amount of people that have come out with cards and otherwise. And do you know what? You must have spent €1,000 on mascaras for me this year alone. Jackie and the kids will have nothing to wear on their feet if you don't stop sending me mascaras. But I love to see them coming in. Now, where can they get the tickets?
Yeah, well, they can contact me. So they can, as I said, we have a little office in the Westside Resource Centre.
In
Westside. And James and Una are there. There's so many offices there for local groups, community groups. It's a great
place,
and they're just brilliant. So they are, or they can contact me on 087-618-9094. I'm sure if they drop into the King's Head as well, they'll be able to give them my number as well.
Some Mary will put them in the Ruby Room. Then, yes. So anyone that goes to the King's Head, go to the Ruby Room from there. How's business, by the way?
Business is not too bad. Like, January and February was very quiet throughout the city, But it's picked up now in the last week or so, and there's a lot of tourists back.
I was in town last weekend for a walk, wasn't it? Yeah, but there's a lot of tourists in town.
There is, yeah, just in the last 10 days or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were sorely missed.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And those bus tours coming in for a day, they must pack an awful lot in.
Yeah, they do. And they were up, they've probably been to the Cliffs of Moher and had their breakfast in Tralee before they even make it to Galway.
Yeah.
You know, they've packed it all in, or on a return trip to Dublin, you know.
It's a lot. It really is an awful lot. When are you travelling next?
I'm okay until after Easter, and then I'm going to Uganda, I think, as far as I know, and then later on in the year, then I'm going to Kenya and Ethiopia again. So I am, and then in November, then we have the GAA trip that we bring GAA players through the GPA and the GAA with Alan Kearns as well to visit programs in Kenya. And they're helping to plant a million trees in Africa, along with Glenisk, the yogurt company. Mm. And I'm actually going to Limerick after this now to collect trees to deliver to schools around the west of Ireland. The INTO are involved in tree planting with us as well. We're trying to plant 100,000 trees in Ireland and 1 million trees in Africa. And we've done that over the last 5 years as well. And this is over the last 4 years, this is our fifth year doing it now as well, so...
Because you need to mind yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you a long time, but I mean, you're emotional, so you need to mind. Doesn't he need to mind
yourself? Yes, he's on the road day and night. Anytime you meet him, he's either going to Dublin, going to Limerick, going to Africa. He's always travelling,
And I've done Kenya before, and I swore I'd never, ever, ever do it again. I did it with another charity, not Self Help Africa. Yeah. And what I saw there still haunts me to this day.
Yeah.
So when you keep going back into that line of fire, and it's not easy on the mind to... And you're such a sensitive person.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Just mind yourself. We need you.
Oh, yeah.
We need you.
I know there's good people out there, and we all work together, and I have a good team of colleagues and our colleagues on the ground out there.
You do, but you have a wonderful wife and two children at home, so you have to focus on. I'm a day off. You can out to one ear. This is like sitting on the table at home saying, we need to talk about this, Ronan, so we do. Anyway, King's Head, so this coming... Friday for
International Women's Day, and it's about...
Is it, Ronan? I didn't realise that. International Women's Day, and
this year it's about investing in women and in encouraging women, and also, you know, continuing to let women inspire us, you know, because there's so many things happen to women in our world. They're not even second-class citizens in some countries.
Which is shocking.
It's absolutely shocking. And you know, like, and there's so many things happen. They're not allowed in politics in some countries. They're not allowed to take part in community programs. Like, even in Africa, the amount of money that's pumped into Africa, the amount of money that is spent least on women, and that's what we're trying to change as well. We're trying to, you know, help rural women farmers. We're trying to train them, educate them, you know, around literacy, around different ways of farming techniques, around setting up business. We've set up the credit union as well, mm-hmm. with women for women in Ethiopia and in Gambia. So like, there's so much needs to be done for women. A lot has been done, as they say, but a lot more needs to be done, you know, for women in the world, to bring them on equal par with men, because you know, women are just wonderful and fantastic, and we need to help them, especially those that have been trafficked, or those that have been abused or are involved in the domestic abuse or sexual abuse or physical abuse. We need to do all we can to help women in our world, and we should be so thankful for the women in our lives, and to love them more and care for them more, because they are a wonderful, wonderful people. So they are our women.
And so say all of us. Mary, thanks for popping into us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for propping them up over there. So I was going to fall over at some stage. No, he was. In regards to Paul and the family as well, and keep up the good work. And again, if you want to get further details, you can give Ronan a call on 087-618-9094. That's not your wife's number now,
no.
Is it?
No.
He'd be cute enough now to give Jackie's number. 087-618-9094, and the tickets are €40, and you're going to have a great afternoon, so you're. Let's take a short commercial break, and we're going to our history section next. Stay tuned for that and more to come. Where can I get tickets for the King's Head? Ring 087-618-9094 and get further details from there. You'll get a 2% discount from Ronan, so you will. A very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. I was flicking through over the last couple of weekends Hardiman's History of Galway, and I've learned so much from it that I just wanted to chat about it this morning. So I want to go to Tom Kenny, who joins me from Kenny's and joins me on the line. Tom, morning to you.
Hello, Keith.
Good to talk to you, and thanks indeed for taking the call this morning. The book
You're
itself,
very welcome.
The book itself, I came across it in the house, and I hadn't looked at it, I'd say, ever, to be quite honest. But it really and truly is a huge resource as to where Galway came from.
Yeah, it's incredibly important, I agree. The title of the book is The History of the Town and County of the Town of Galway, from the earliest period to the present time, which was 1820, and embellished with several engravings. So it was the first real history of the town of Galway, and it's quite comprehensive. He did a huge amount of research. Hardiman was a Westport man. He initially had hoped to become a priest, but he had some kind of a problem with one of his eyes, and he needed special dispensation to become a priest. And it took so long for this to arrive from the then Pope that he gave up the whole idea. He did a certain amount of law. He came to Galway, obviously. And there's a huge amount of collection of material in this book. It's very important because it's of its time as well. Mm. It's 200 years ago. So there's quite a lot of background on each of the tribes, a kind of a potted history of each of the tribes, and then a chronological history of the town, going from the earliest days, all of the kind of material that he could gather. But then, you know, there's what he describes as the modern state and description of the town, and he gives us quite a lot of detail about, for instance, public markets, the corn market, the meat market, the fish market, the vegetable market, the butter market, etc.
Yeah.
And paragraphs on each of these on different kinds of societies and schools and colleges. But while it's very important, we can't take everything he said as gospel. There's a very interesting case on a man called the Reverend Edward McGinn. He wrote a romantic novel in three volumes in the year 1807, and this reappeared in Hardiman's history. Mm. But in fact, what it is, it was a thing that McGinn invented, a story of what we now know as the legend of the Lynch window, of the mayor hanging his son, because he killed a young Spaniard who had come to live in Galway. Excuse me. It was a crime of passion, and so on. This was written in a romantic novel, but Hardiman picked up on the story some 12, 13 years later, and he elaborated on it, and he kind of turned it into something quite different. And the problem is that because it appeared in Argyman's history, it was taken as gospel, as fact.
Wow.
In fact, the Reverend James Mitchell, he wrote a paper, he did a huge amount of research on this about 50 years ago in the Galway Archaeological Journal, and he completely debunked that legend, telling us that, in fact, that's what it was, a legend.
Wow.
It never actually happened. It was an invention for a romantic novel.
Mm.
So Hardyman, we rejoice in him and we thank him for all he did, but occasionally he picked up on things that were hearsay, really, or rumour that he... But having said all of that now, and that's a minor quibble, the book is hugely important, hugely significant. It came out in 1820. It was very rare and very scarce for quite a long time. And then in the 1920s, my grandfather, Tom Cork, he reprinted it in the Tribune. Now, his version was slightly... He didn't use all of the illustrations, for example. And it was a kind of a cheap print run, but it was nevertheless, it made it available and accessible again to people. And then my father decided that he was going to reprint it as well. So in the 1970s, we did a facsimile of the first edition.
Wow.
Which has all of the maps and the illustrations in it as well.
Now
the Connacht Tribune have done another edition of it. It's keeping it in print. So it's a very significant and important book. And for anybody interested in the history of Galway, it's certainly something that you have to have in your library. It's a dip-in book.
Yeah.
It's not one that you sit down to read from start to finish, anything like that. But it's fascinating, and it kind of shows us what the rich tapestry of the history of Galway was like, really. It's condensed in this volume up until 1820. And it's interesting as well that it's so powerful. Like, Hardyman is synonymous with the history of Galway for most people. So it wasn't until some years ago that John Cunningham... who is now a lecturer in history in UCG.
Yes.
He brought out a book which was kind of history of Galway for the rest of the 19th century, from 1820 on, and a hugely important book. But that was the first real attempt at a Galway city history after Hardyman, and that came 40, 50 years later.
And was that the one that John co-authored with, didn't he co-author that with Kieran McDonough?
That was a book of essays, which is also hugely, it's a terrific book. It's called Hardyman and Beyond, the Arts and Culture of Galway Since 1820.
Ah, yeah.
And it is a collection of essays of... various aspects of life in Galway since. So some of it is history, some of it, there's a major essay on Hardyman himself, but there's a an essay on the economy, on society, on Páraic O'Connor, on the arts, on poetry, literature, different aspects of Galway life, and some of the people as well.
Yeah.
Representations in art in Galway, from 1800 to 1960. This was a celebration of Hardyman. Mm. The book that John Cunningham wrote on the 19th century is called A Town Tormented by the Sea. And
That's right.
It is something I would highly recommend to anybody interested in the history of Galway, because it brings it kind of up to the beginning of the 20th century. And it's fascinating. He did a vast amount of research when working on this book. So there's a trio, an interesting trio now, all thanks to Hardyman, really.
Mm-hmm.
He started off a lot.
Well, it gives you an insight, I suppose, for me, that I hadn't read it before over the last couple of weekends. It gives you an insight into the heritage of Galway. It gives you, like, there was very few cars on the road, it was horses, it was all of that. It was a totally different town, but the structure is the same.
Yeah.
It's still a medieval city.
He was kind of regarded more as an antiquary than as an historian. In other words, he was deeply interested in the history, but he was also interested in the philology, in the archaeology, in the folklore, in the music.
Yeah.
It was a much broader canvas that he used than just simply the history of. He also did a very important book called Irish Minstrelsy, which was a collection of Irish language songs that he wanted to preserve and keep. And it's very, very important in the history of Irish music. He was deeply interested in the Irish language. So, he was a very productive man. I mean, the library in UCG is named after him.
Yeah.
The hotel, which was the Great Southern, which has undergone several name changes, but it's now the Hardyman. And so he's been much honoured, really. Mm. And rightly so. He was the first librarian in UCG. And he was a very generous man. He donated quite a few of his books. He gave a collection to the Mechanics Institute. He gave a collection to what is today the Chamber of Commerce, of 1,000 books, back in the mid-19th century. And that was a huge donation at the time. So he is well and truly and fondly remembered.
And can I ask you finally, Tom, just does the book still sell well, and is there still people coming looking for it?
All the time. There's a much broader interest now in history and in the history of Galway than there ever was.
Mm.
So there are quite a lot of people like you who actually may have had the book in the house but never read it. It's quite an intimidating volume in the sense it's a big, bulky book. And so that may have frightened some. But as you say, once you dip into it, becomes absolutely fascinating.
I can't wait to get home tonight and read a few more pages of it as well. Tom Kenny, thank you so much for joining us today, as always.
Sure thing, Keith.
Well, thank you
You're
so
welcome.
Much for joining us today on the programme. That's what I'll be doing now. Thank you to Tom Kenny and everybody else who made today's programme so special. Don't forget, if you want to get tickets to the King's Head for that Friday event with Self Help Africa and the King's Head, 087-618-9094. Book your tickets from there. Ireland's first regional women's caucus to host a webinar series celebrating women in local politics. The Galway Academic Talks, he speaks of his work indeed in the States in the build-up to St. Patrick's Day. Women in leadership skills, we're looking at that. The kind of Tribune headlines we have tomorrow. In Galway, Simon Community are raising awareness of women in homelessness for International Women's Day. The Sir Optimists in Ballinasloe hosting an event, Pet Talk. We've got Music Mornings with Siobhan Kelleher, and we have Ours to Protect. We're looking at planning. John Morley produced, and Siobhan took your comments. We're yours truly, Keith Finnegan. Until tomorrow morning, have a good and a safe Wednesday. Bye-bye now.